2-2. Swing and a miss. The airbender. Ball game.
There are those times in the MLB offseason when one move prompts so many questions about what is going to happen next. And that was the case with Devin Williams signing with the New York Mets, as first reported by Will Salmon and Jeff Passan. 3 years at just around $50 million. Now come the questions. What does this mean for Edwin Diaz? So far, it seems the Mets are certainly open to signing Diaz as well, and what a bullpen they would have in that case. Also, what does this mean for Peter Fairbanks, who is now perhaps the next relief pitcher to sign with teams like the Marlins and the Tigers, both interested in Peter Fairbanks? But perhaps the greatest question of all, why did Devin Williams stay in New York after that up-and-down season with the New York Yankees? The answer, of course, the familiarity with David Stearns in New York, of course, his former GM with the Milwaukee Brewers. And most importantly, if you look at Devin Williams' underlying numbers, his fielding independent pitching was about in 2025 what it was in 2023 when he was an all-star. Small sample size, perhaps, in New York. Well, it's about to become larger. 3 years with the Mets for Devin Williams.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast, our short here on this Tuesday, December the 2nd, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at the new and improved website, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You could chat with us for free, get some premium content, get updates on the show. Just come by and join us. I'm sure you'll have a good time. So, welcome, and just 48 hours after we had our Sunday show, I'm back. That's what this time of the year is all about. And Mets getting Cyber Monday deals, I guess you could call it. Devin Williams of the Mets late on Monday, 3 years, $50 million, some deferred money, and starts the ball rolling for the winter meetings a little early. And as I said on Sunday, get ready. It's going to be a wild 2 weeks, I think. And although I don't think the Mets and all their shopping will be done, I think you're going to see the team really start to materialize for 2026. And I think yesterday's move for Devin Williams, which I found a little surprising, isn't totally shocking. And you got to give Jeff Passan credit. And what was it, 2 weeks ago, right before when we were on the air and the Brandon Nimmo trade came down, I had said, hey, Passan had info and take a look at it. And this is agent talk and there's a lot of musings going on and don't always listen to everything you hear. And I still stand by that. And some of the, in particular, when I saw some of the commentary in the Reddit from Anthony DeComo, or beat reporter for the Mets, I just shake my head when I see a beat reporter for the Mets analysis about Edwin Diaz goes along the lines of, well, David Stearns doesn't like signing closers based on history, and he's going to go to the Dodgers because the Dodgers are the Dodgers, and that's why they're the favorite. And then all of a sudden, people run around and say, oh, Anthony DeComo says the Dodgers are the favorite for Diaz, and he did, but his rationale and his sourcing was awful. It was no different than somebody on X, just a rando fan saying it, and that's how rumors start. But fortunately, that didn't last long, and when the news came down about 9:30, I think that it obviously is exciting at this time of the year when the big move comes down, but there are more questions right now than answers when it comes to the Mets and building the bullpen. Now, as I said on Sunday, what I like to do to start out anytime we talk about team building, we always like to say, well, I want the Mets to sign this guy. I want them to go after this guy. And ultimately, it's so hard to connect. I mean, there's obvious connections between teams and players, especially when it comes to the trade market. So what I like to do is say, okay, this is the outline of where I think the Mets need to bring their bullpen. And I said from the start of the offseason, the bullpen was re-signing Diaz and building around him, because I didn't see the Mets going two or three or four deep in terms of signing free agents out of the bullpen. That would be a lot out of character. And although I don't subscribe to what Tecomo said in his Reddit chat, where David Stearns doesn't like big-time closers because his behavior in Milwaukee has no bearing in terms of payroll and investment in payroll to what's going to be available to him in New York, especially now with the news that it looks more and more likely that Steve Cohen's going to have his casino in about 5 years and a ton of revenue coming in that time. It did not seem like that Stearns would go out and invest based on what he's done with the Mets and resources with the bullpen over the last couple of years. So I said, you re-sign Diaz, you then go out, and it would be nice if the Mets could go pluck a second closer. Then you have Raley, and then you have Minter coming back, and you could play a little bit more and feel a little bit more comfortable with the chemistry experiment, and then maybe upgrading at the deadline when you're playing around with the sixth and maybe seventh inning. And if you improve the starting pitching, the variability of what you put out there in the sixth and seventh inning is not as damaging. You're not going to those arms every night, and you're not just getting four inning starts from your starting rotation. And that is hopefully, as we get deeper and deeper into the offseason and with next week and the winter meetings, some of those moves will come and be crystallized. So the Mets have done, and what we think they've done, is what the plan I put out there, the desired plan anyway, sign a second closer, that would be Devin Williams, and then bring back Diaz. And the reports are out there that this move does not preclude them from re-signing Diaz. It looks right away that it was put out there into the media that, hey, we're not out on Edwin Diaz. Now, what we do know is that Edwin Diaz is looking for a five-year deal. He's looking for the same type of deal that he was given 3 years ago when he was 3 years younger. He was in his late, in the middle of his prime, and now he's entering his late prime. A five-year deal for a 31, 32-year-old closer is a very dangerous deal, especially when it's an all-time record-breaking deal for relievers. You're looking at a $100 million contract, $20 million AAV. I have to think, after looking at some of the deferred money that Devin Williams took on his deal, a trend that the Dodgers started, that Diaz could potentially be had with something similar in deferred money. Gives you a nice retirement payout down the road when you can't pitch anymore and you may not want to work and get into the grind like the rest of us over there. So I still think that they'll come to an accord, but obviously, Devin Williams now puts some leverage back in the Mets' camp because they have a closer, and then they could maybe pivot to whatever their plan B or C is in terms of the bridge to Devin Williams. That's not what we want to hear, but that's an option now if negotiations with Diaz go haywire. And as I said on Sunday, all it takes is one team. Look at what happened with Dylan Cease and the Blue Jays, a seven-year deal, and Dylan Cease, who I thought, many thought, we're going to get or was going to get a Blake Snell-type bridge contract to potentially rebuild his value and then get that big deal after a year and an opt-out or something. He got it right away. The Blue Jays saw what a lot of other teams felt. Hey, I could take this guy. This guy is someone that should be a lot better than what he's been. His stuff is a lot better. So all it takes, the point being, is that there's one team that could blow Diaz away, and then the Mets have a tough decision. But I will say this, the decision when it comes to baseball shouldn't be that tough, because outside of Diaz, when you start to look at who's left, who's available, now that Williams is off the board and signed with the Mets, and Helsley went to Baltimore, and Rosell Iglesias went back to Atlanta, and Phil Maton, I know everybody probably wrinkles their nose up when they hear Phil Maton, but he was pretty good last year, Maton, when he was in St. Louis, and then he was in Texas. He's off the board. So when you look at what's left, you have a Kenley Jansen, a veteran arm, not the same. You have old friend Taylor Rogers, Tyler Rogers, who I personally think is a good option. It's somebody that I would love to see the Mets bring back. You have Emilio Pagan, who I don't think is a bad arm, but I think is down the list of closer options. You have Pete Fairbanks. I have some questions going from a small market Tampa into New York on that. And Robert Suarez, which everybody talks about, hey, he's up there with Diaz in metrics. And if you talk about, and we'll get to in a minute, Devin Williams advanced metrics and some of the concerns or non-concerns you have, Robert Suarez has a ton of hard contact in his profile, which indicate last year, and I'm not saying he's a bad reliever, but what you saw last year and some of the numbers that you saw, it does not lend itself, based on the hard contact, and just go to Baseball Savant, it's publicly available, that he'll continue to produce at that level. And he's not Edwin Diaz. So really, it's Edwin Diaz or bust. And I guess the question then goes, Diaz now potentially lost one big money suitor if the Mets want to play that and say, hey, I have Devin Williams. Are there others out there? Would the Yankees get involved? Would the Blue Jays get back involved and really try to build up their team? The Rogers Communication Company, cable company, has tons of money. They typically haven't spent it in the past, but that seems to be changing. They could spend right there with Cohen. There's not many teams that could do that. Certainly the Dodgers could spend that. But after giving Tanner Scott a big deal, would they do that again? And again, if it's deferred money, why not just come back to the Mets? The Mets could play that game. And remember something. Here's the deal. And this is something that I think continues, casino or no casino, that gets forgotten. Mets can get anybody they want. They just have to spend the money and want to spend the money. It's not about, and I know that the whole narrative is, well, Stearns doesn't like to spend the money. You don't know that. He's also responsible to his boss to spend his money wisely. And what I see on Twitter a lot of times and talk radio and fans writing and calling it is because it's Monopoly money and because it's money that we can't touch and feel or earn, even though it comes from us with the time and effort and support that we give the team. So it's really our money in the end of the day, even though it's not directly coming from us. There's some of the most foolish thought processes behind resource allocation that I've ever seen. And I know that we're all talking like fans and trying to be passionate, and it's all about the team and the player and wanting the player, but it is Stern's responsibility to spend the owner's money wisely. And if that doesn't, and being wise doesn't mean just going to Edwin Diaz and say, hey, here's a blank check, fill it out. That's not how you do it. So that's where you're at. I still think that Diaz comes back. We'll see. And if he doesn't, it'd be very interesting how they fill out this bullpen, because I would feel a lot better about this bullpen with the eighth and ninth inning locked down with Williams and Diaz. Essentially, what they're doing is trying to recreate what failed with Helsley and Diaz. And yes, and I'll get to this in a minute, Devin Williams had a year in the Bronx that was not a banner year. He had that awful ninth inning that broke the hearts of the whole city of Milwaukee, made a great night for us as Mets fans. We still remember it. But he does not have the red flags that Helsley had, particularly with his fastball and how hard it was being hit, how lefties hit him so hard. And then when he came over, between him not being able to figure out if it was pitch tipping, if it was some kind of repertoire thing, some kind of mechanics, injuries, whatever, it's the Orioles' problem now. They never really got off the ground, the Super Bullpen. Now this might be an opportunity to get a second crack at it. And let's face it, as good as Helsley's been, Devin Williams has been that much good or better. You want to know how much better? If the Mets sign both Diaz and Williams, they will have, since 2021, they will have the number two and number three, according to Fangraphs, bullpen arms out there. Since 2021, Emmanuel Clase, who knows when he's ever going to pitch again, if ever, Diaz is number two, Williams is number three, Iglesias is number four, Josh Hader is number five, David Bednar, who's in the Bronx, is number six, Helsley seven, Griffin Jacks eight, Brian Abreu nine, and then Kenley Jansen 10. So that's your top 10 bullpen arms according to Fangraphs since 2021. The Mets will have two of them. They'd have three of them on their roster within 6 months, if Diaz re-signs, and obviously Helsley's on that list. So really, at this point, the Mets are using their money to lock down the eighth and ninth inning, and then between an improved rotation and then using some of their resources with the pitching lab and obviously the veterans like Raley and Minter, hopefully healthy, coming back, they'll be able to figure out the non-Diaz days. Williams could slide in on those days potentially when Diaz is not available, and they'll be able to navigate. They have some young arms like a Dylan Ross, and there's a lot more to do. If they sign Diaz, I'd still like them to bring back Rogers and get another arm. We'll see how that market goes. And who knows, Rogers is a guy I could see, with the closers falling off the board, that might get a closing job. As, you know, teams look at how Diaz, how expensive he is, Suarez might get an expensive contract. Now, let's get to Devin Williams and maybe some of the concerns you have. I'm not going to be a phony here. I'm not one that gets crazy about the whole, oh, you can't handle New York, the pressure got to him. I do think that there's some history and there's something to be learned, and we could go not too far back to learn what may have been Devin Williams' problem. So go back to 2005 and Brad Lidge. And I don't know if you guys remember, but The Astros went to the World Series in 2005, and they beat the Cardinals in the NLCS in six games. They should have beat them in five games. And with two outs and nobody on in game five, the Cardinals, I think there was a hit, a walk, and then Albert Pujols hit a monster of a home run that wound up winning the ball game and could have turned the series on its head. I mean, talk about a gut punch. You're basically an out away from a pennant. And within a blink of an eye, it all goes away. And Brad Lidge was the closer, and Brad Lidge gave up that home run. Now, up to that point, Brad Lidge had been in the regular season and the postseason a dominant closer, a dominant reliever, maybe one of the best in the game at that point, outside of Mariano Rivera and maybe John Smoltz, who was closing. I believe he was still closing at that time. And Lidge, the rest of that postseason, even though the Astros were swept in the World Series by Chicago, but the rest of the postseason, he was bad. And he was pretty bad the next couple of years in Houston. Eventually getting a trade to the Phillies and helping the Phillies win a championship and actually figuring it out and being really good in Philadelphia. Maybe a kind of closer that was a little sweaty at times, but being really good in Philadelphia. And the Phillies took a chance and they won on that. And I think that at the time, I remember there was a lot of talk about was there some kind of hangover effect. When you have this kind of traumatic baseball experience, when you blow a save in a big spot, like Brad Lidge did. Now, it turned out his team wound up winning a pennant, whereas when Devin Williams did it against the Mets and Pete Alonso hit that home run, and that was, as glorious it was for us on the Mets side, I think that anybody who peeked around to the other side with the whole Bob Uecker situation, how he was crying in the locker room, and Pat Murphy, and they were heartbroken. The city of Milwaukee was heartbroken on that. That was the defeat snatched from the jaws of victory. And I think that Devin Williams was traded not just because of financial reasons. I think that they questioned whether or not he could come back with that kind of failure. Now, he goes to the Yankees, he goes to the Bronx, not the first guy to go over there and struggle. And the thought is that in Milwaukee front office threw it out there, particularly this offseason, that they didn't think he was a fit for New York for the pressure cooker. And we'll see. He had a very uneven 2025. He was bad as a Yankees closer. He had stretches where he looked like Devin Williams. The good news is down the stretch in September into the postseason, he was his old dominant self. Was it mechanics? What was it? We'll find out, and it'll be a conversation in Port St. Lucie. But I think the concern that you have to look at is twofold. Let's put, and it's out there, the whole giving up the Pete Alonso home run, the postseason failure, the New York-itis. These are things that we can't measure. And we could sit there and debate, and 50% of the people are going to say it's nonsense. 50% of the people are going to say there's something to it. And there are going to be many people in between in the industry that are going to either validate it or call it poppycock at that point. Now, if you look straight at numbers and you just go to what Williams has produced, this is a guy that historically, and this is what they're all going to cite, gives up soft contact. The expected batting average against him is somewhere in the .150 range. His changeup in his good years is a pitch that the opposition will hit about .160 against. His four-seamer is a pitch that at times they'll hit, you know, significantly below .200 against. There's some seasons they've hit as low as .111 against. And last year, both of those pitches, because he's a two-pitch pitcher, now do the Mets dive into this cutter that he very rarely throws and work with him on that? We'll see. But last year, his changeup, the opposition hit a .194 against, and his fastball, they hit .204 against. Still very good numbers, but historically very high for him. Some of the worst. Now, when you talk about expected batting average and things that indicate more how the outcome could have been different and the sustainability of the process, he still was very good. He was among the leaders in expected batting average and expected slugging, just not as good as he normally is. He was a .195 in expected batting average. He was .314 in expected slugging, still very good. His K rate was around 35%, still very good. His walk rate was down, so he got his walks down a little bit. And his ERA, which actually was, if you look at the metrics, should have been a tick over 3 instead of the 4.79 that he had. And I do agree with a lot of people, especially with relievers, with all the, you have one bad out and you give 5 runs in one inning, your ERA is damaged for a while and maybe for the season. You'll never see it really come back. If you even look at Diaz a year ago in 2024, when he got off to that lousy start his ERA never really recovered by the end of the year. He was great in the second half, and he helped obviously get them to a championship series. But relievers have a couple of bad outings, 6 runs in 2 innings. It's going to impact them. When they only pitch in 50 innings, it's going to impact them the rest of the year. So the numbers are still really good. The question is he declining because of what happened in Milwaukee against Alonso, New Yorkitis? But also remember, nobody's talking about it. He had a, and he was out most of the season in 24, he had a stress fracture in his back that kept him out till pretty much August in 2024. Now, there was no surgery. He played a full season. He was up until the Alonso home run in 24, he was dominant. And nobody's talked about it. But backs are something similar to what I talked about with Nimmo, with plantar fasciitis and lower body and herniated discs. They are tricky. And they don't tend to get better. They need to be maintained. And when they go, and when you have a bad back, you're pretty much, you can't just pitch through it. You're sidelined. So the question is there something going on? And we learned a little bit about physicals. I think the Orioles recently did a trade, and it was, and who knows, the Mets have had their issues with trades and physicals, Victor Zambrano, things like that. It's not like they're doing a full body scan on a guy. And sometimes with backs, other than inflammation or some kind of structural issue, you're not really going to know that it's breaking down until it breaks down. There's things you can look for, especially with science and technology now. So these are things to think about. These are concerns. Now, as far as the contract, it's a perfect contract for what you would want out of a pitcher, a 3-year deal. So if you get a year, year and a half, 2 years out of it, and the last year is a bust, you're out of that contract and you can move on pretty quick. I think that's really, I think that it's pretty obvious that with Diaz wanting 5 years, that's the hangup. If Diaz came to the Mets with a 3-year deal between Devin Williams and Diaz on 3-year deals, you're solid, you're good, and you could feel pretty comfortable about that being a good deal. And look, as far as Devin Williams, he's 30 years old. He's a couple of years younger than Diaz, but he's still in that, entering towards that end of his, heart of his prime into his later prime. You know, he's a guy that should stay relatively healthy. There's no other issues. I mean, there's been some small things with his elbow, but there's no other indication that he's a guy ready to break down. He hasn't been really overused per se. 2024 with the shutdown of the back actually probably saved some bullets out of that arm. So from that standpoint, it's a positive. That to me are the questions that we're just not going to have answers for right now. What everybody's going to talk about is New Yorkitis. What everybody's going to talk about is what happened with the Yankees. And mark my words, and you'll see the mask come off. Wait till you see the hatchet jobs that the Yankee fans and the media are going to do to this guy. Because again, they're going to say, you came here, you're already talking about the beard policy, the fans, how they screwed up the beard policy. The Yankees relented on beards because he wanted his beard. They didn't have to do that. The Yankees just said no. He was on the contract. So they're mad about that because you changed some sacred culture that they've had forever. He didn't pitch well. They're not going to care about what he did in the postseason because the postseason ended in disappointment. And now for the second year in a row, they go across town to the Mets. I think the thing that Yankee fans should realize, and it was on X recently, when you look at net worth of owners, Hal Steinbrenner, and yes, he's very wealthy in the real world, worth $2 billion, but in the scope of where baseball's going, the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, the Mets, the kind of money that Cohen's going to have coming in with that casino, that's the kind of wealth that plays now in sports. Hal Steinbrenner's not that wealthy when you look at the top of the top of the owners in this league. No more are you going to be a used car salesman like Bud Selig and own a team and buy a team and be able to do some kind of competitive product like you did in the 80s. It's not going to happen. That's not the way the game works anymore. So, that's my stance on Williams. I don't want to go on and on and on. I think that there are things that you should just really look at. The back, think about that. Look at the metrics. Why? Why were the metrics a tick higher? Not bad, but he never really, outside of that late September, perfect timing into the postseason, got a real role of who he is. He had a short period in June into the All-Star break where he was the old Devin Williams. But consistently, anybody who, from afar, even though you're here in New York, not really following the Yankees with all the stuff going on with the Mets, you saw every night when he came in, even if he had a bit of a cushion, it was a high wire act, and he was not himself. He was a very mediocre reliever. It forced the Yankees to go out and get David Bednar. It put Luke Weaver, who, let's face it, shouldn't be in the same breath as Devin Williams, into a closer role. So he didn't do his part. He was a disappointment. And, I mean, maybe coming over to the Mets, is it going to get any better, the pressure cooker? No. Bullpen guys, especially closers, have a hard history here with Mets fans because they've seen a lot of ninth-inning heartbreak. And nothing is worse in baseball than having defeat snatched from the jaws of victory. Nothing more gut-punching than working hard for 8 innings or 8 2/3 innings, twists and turns. You invest 3 hours of your day into a ball game, and you're ready to celebrate and get on with your day and feel good, and then the bullpen blows it late as you're about to get the good vibes going. And that's where the relationship between reliever and fans gets complicated. So what's next? Things could turn on a dime as I'm talking to you here on this early morning. Looking at the Twitter feed, looking to see if there's any updates. I have a feeling you and I are going to be talking a lot between now and potentially a Sunday show. I think next week is going to get wild. And, we'll see. But my feeling is the plan here is exactly what I laid out at the beginning of the offseason. Sign Diaz, put in your second closer in the eighth inning, have an acceptable backup for the days that Diaz is not available. You could play a little bit of chemistry experiment with the sixth inning. You have Raley, who is really good, hopefully stays healthy. Minter will be out earlier in the year, but maybe he'll come back and be healthy. Got a couple of really good lefties. Maybe you go out, try to see if you could bring Rogers back if the cost doesn't get too high or he gets a closer job. If not, maybe you shop on the bargain bin getting later into the winter. And then, of course, you have your own arms in the system, and then you get the scrap heap, and we know that they're still going to play the scrap heap when it comes to the bullpen. So I think that the plan is working out exactly as we laid it out at the beginning of the offseason. Hey, maybe David Stern should talk about putting the Talking Mets podcast on the payroll here. We could help him out a little bit. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this special edition, reaction edition to the Devin Williams signing. Of course, you could check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come to the new improve. TalkingMetsPodcast.com to chat, premium content, updates on the show. It's all there. Till next time, take care, everybody. Beat the Mets. Beat the Mets. Beat the Mets. Beat the Mets. Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Head for the park and greet the Mets. Hot dogs, green grass, all out of shade. Guaranteed to have a heck of a